Hello and welcome to episode 79 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week, Ankita woke up with joy at 5 a.m. in the morning and seemed to have woken Shane up as well. We had some really interesting news that we both came across today. So it's something we really want to discuss because we've all been through it in some form or another, especially if we are Desi girls raised in traditional homes. And it's about how women are not allowed to touch any deity, do any aarti, even enter a mandir if they're menstruating or on their period, because that is considered impure. So I will let Ankita take over because she is the one who woke up with joy at 5 a.m. for some weird reason. I listened to Ankita when she told me about it, and we just had to sit down and record this. And this is a Friday. Ankita has had a long day at work. I've had a long day of moving my stuff into Northampton, and apparently both of us have just had breakfast today, and it's almost 8 p.m. But this is too exciting news to just shove under the carpet. So here we are recording, and Ankita, go ahead, take it away. Tell the listeners what woke you up at 5 a.m.
Thank you, Meenal. That was quite an introduction. And thank you for also pointing out that it's close to 8 p.m. now, because I just realized that I haven't eaten in exactly 12 hours, which is probably why I was putting all of that popcorn into my mouth right now. But I didn't wake up at 5 a.m. 5 a.m. is when Shane came to bed after he was done editing one of the episodes of the podcast. But I woke up at 7, and one of the first pieces of news that I consumed on my mobile phone while in bed was that the Indian Supreme Court has passed a ruling saying that women are now allowed to enter the Sabarimala temple. Sabarimala is basically a temple in Kerala. It's close to where I was born and raised. It's a very famous temple that people from my state and people from the neighboring states as well, most of South India, they make a pilgrimage to Sabarimala. And for those of you who are not aware of this temple and what the pilgrimage entails, women are not allowed in there, which means that girls up to the age of 10-ish, based on when they get their period, and women who have hit menopause are allowed to go. And only men are allowed to enter the temple most of the time. It's very rare to come across any female presence there. The basis for this is that the deity, he's called Ayyappan. He is a celibate. I think I'm getting the story right. Yeah, he's a celibate.
Well, if you're not, it's really going to affect our, rep.
I know.
As Desi Outsiders, so.
I'm sure of this. He's a celibate and he doesn't want, he doesn't want any female presence around him. But those of you who are Malayalis or South Indians who are listening to this and have something to add to this as to why, what is the reasoning behind why women are not allowed up the temple, please do let me know as well. I'm sure I can read up on it as well. I'm sure you
But you're too busy shoving popcorn in your mouth.
And also, working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot. You're saving the internet.
I'm saving the internet. So I didn't have the chance today. I didn't have the chance to even have lunch today at work. Otherwise, I would have probably read up on the story a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's that.
So Ankita, just to clarify, right? Because I was raised in Gibraltar and I was allowed to go into my mandir at home after I'd taken a shower. So I'd have to take a shower in the morning as always, like as usual. But then my mom would make me shower in the evening before I did my evening prayer. And then when we had any festivals in the mandir, my mom always told me to stand at the back. Mm-hmm. I was never allowed to go forward to do aarti or anything. Mm. But obviously when I wasn't on my period, I was allowed to go into the mandir and do the usual stuff that we're all allowed to do. But in this temple is interesting for me because it's banning women from a specific age group.
Yeah, and it's basically menstruating women.
Yeah, so my question is that I understand the idea behind not allowing women to enter a mandir if they're on the period because that's considered impure.
Do you?
No, okay. I don't understand. I say I understand. I'm not saying I agree.
Okay.
I understand like the logic, not the logic because there's no logic. But
it's a no.
Okay, before we go into like really gray areas, I don't want to say anything that's not politically correct, but I understand why people say it and I understand
the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, and I understand where people are getting it from. Mm. I don't agree with it, but this one is interesting because it's banning a big population of women.
Because isn't that the age group that seduces men? especially when the deity is celibate.
Well, it's I didn't realize the effect of it until last week, and I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. We celebrate Ganpati in Gibraltar. We got a big community from Maharashtra, and Ganpati, the Visarjan, is a very big festival for us. And it's usually a 10 or 11 day celebration. Mm-hmm. And if I'm on my period during the Ganpati, it means that I will be out for 3 or 4 days, can't go into the mandir for 3 or 4 days. Not a big deal. Okay, I'll miss like maybe half of the celebration. No problem. But what I did realize was that in India, some families have Ganpati for 4 days or 5 days, depending on their family. So if you are a woman who menstruates for 6 days or 7 days, you're going to miss a whole festival.
Yeah.
And if it's a big thing in your family, you have to sit out. And you are sitting out in an occasion where you're celebrating or you're worshipping a god, but the same god has given you these organs, the same god has made you this way.
It's science, but whatever.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to reason with the people,
the believers.
Yeah. I mean, if you believe that God doesn't want any impurities near them during any prayer or any procession, then why did you make a woman like that, right? You made a woman so that they can have a baby and deliver a child.
She's a baby machine. Why else?
So I think I only realized the severity of it last week when I was on Twitter and I saw that a lot of women were affected because of this problem.
And also it's very the most surprising thing to me is that a lot of women have protested against being given the right to enter this temple. And those of you who have been, you know, reading the news, I suppose, would have heard about the Kerala floods that happened just a few weeks ago, where it was devastating. My entire state was flooded and there was so much, you know, so much loss that happened during that time when there was this horrible flood. And there was a horrible video on the internet, on Facebook and all other social media platforms, where this lady just basically goes on a rant about how this flooding was a direct result of women wanting to enter the Sabarimala temple.
What?
And yes, and she was like, and she was using abusive language, she was using threatening language, she was saying things like, I want to kill those women, I want to slap them, I want to beat them, I want to physically assault the women who were wanting to go to the temple, and now look at you sitting at home and suffering because of the floods, because this is what happens if you anger the gods, blah, blah, blah.
And this is a woman saying
it. This was a woman saying it. And that video was the funniest, most depressing thing on the internet at that time.
Well, I think, Ankita, the problem with our society and our culture is I feel that women pass on these things to women, and mothers pass it to daughters, and grandmothers pass it to their grandchildren. And the fact is that these ideas... Mm-hmm. are not being passed down by men most of the time. My dad never told...
I believe that it was at least created by men, because I can't see a reason why a woman would go ahead and say, oh, I want to create a rule for that lasts 800 years. I want to create a rule that no other woman like me is allowed to enter the temple. I almost... like it only makes sense for a man to have created that rule.
Well, and that's the thing that, for example, like my dad has never said to me, Meenal, you can't go to the mandir because you're in your period. But it's my mom. My mom has said this to me all the time. You can't do this. You can't do that. My grandmother the same way.
Does your dad have conversations about periods in general with you?
Sometimes, but and when you were younger, to minimal detail.
Okay. Well, that's another thing. That's another reason why this conversation doesn't come from men, because that is also taboo for most fathers and most male members of the family. That could be one of the reasons why they're not the enforcers of this rule.
That's fine. And that's a good point. But if you think about other aspects of Indian culture and Indian society, for example, women and wives are expected to clean. Women and wives are expected to worship their husbands or the mother-in-laws or whatever. Now, this information, I mean, especially in my family, I don't know what it was like in your family, but this information was definitely passed down by all females. My dad has never had this conversation with me where he said to me, Meenal, when you go to your future husband's house, make sure that you cook dinner, lunch for him, make sure... He's never said that. But it's my mom who says, make sure that you do the cleaning. Make sure you have to learn how to cook. You have to learn how to make roti.
That's interesting because I have actually heard this more from my dad than from my mom.
Really? That's very interesting.
When I was 18, I remember this to this day, and I don't know, maybe my dad is listening to this conversation and he probably will remember this as well. When I was 18 and I told him that I want to learn how to drive, one of the first things he said to me was, well, maybe you should learn how to cook first.
Really?
And I don't cook. I'm just saying, as a grown woman, wow. I don't cook for a man. My dad has repeatedly said that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. And a good cook, ma ke haath ka bana hua khana, and you know how a good mother cooks, a good wife cooks well, etc. I almost have a feeling that this could have been a little bit of a jab at my mum, who was not the best cook ever. My mother is one of the most resourceful, intelligent, smart, organized women I have ever known in my life. She's a very, you know, she's a very free-spirited person, but she's not a very good cook because she couldn't care less about cooking. And I have a feeling that this could have been a jab at my mum, whose one failing was that she wouldn't cook. So he would say things like that to me.
Yeah, my dad isn't. We'd like to know from our listeners as well what it's been like in your household, because in my household there's been the woman. But also, to be fair, Angela, it also does depend on who is a more dominant parent. I think your dad seems to be like, because he was in the military and all that, so he would probably be the one.
He was the dominant parent, yes.
Yeah, so my mom was the dominant parent. Mm. My dad was more, I mean, I was scared of my dad, if my dad's listening, just saying it because he's listening, but I was, more seriously, I am scared of my dad. I have a lot of respect for him, but I gained that respect in a different way, in the sense that, like, I don't want to take advantage of him. But with my mom, it's like, I don't want to get slapped. So the respect came from different angles. So it also does depend on who is a dominant partner or the dominant parent. My household, it seems to be the women who are passing down this information and passing it down. I mean, my brother who's going to get married in almost like 10 days now, he's getting married to a German girl. And there's a lot of things that she doesn't understand. And my mom is trying to explain things to her. My mom's not telling her to wash her dishes, do the birthday, none of that. But just like some aspects of our Indian culture, you know, just so that she fits into the family. And my dad just tells my mom, like, to shut up. Because my dad's like, she's not going to get it. She's an independent woman. She's a white woman. She's in her 30s. She knows what she's doing. Yeah. It's like, none of you. So it does depend. So, like, my mom is obviously trying to pass on these values, whether it's not going to the mother because of your period or how to treat your husband. Yeah. It's come from my mom, but in your case, it's come from your dad. So it'd be really interesting to know from our listeners where these...
And something I want to add as well is that for listeners who are not aware of what Sabarimala is and what this tradition was like, I just want to add that this is a tradition of not letting women into the temple. It's not even letting them into a temple. Mala in Malayalam means mountain. So, or hill, sort of. So it's this temple is situated on top of a little bit. It's quite a steep hill that is situated on top of, and it's quite a climb up. So for people who are listening, the whole process of the pilgrimage is that men and little children and women after their menopause who are planning to go, they turn vegetarian for, I think it's 41 days. Men let their beards grow. In a lot of extreme cases, they only wear black. And then on the 41st day, they carry two coconuts, or I can't even remember, something like that, on their heads or their shoulders. And they carry this all the way to the top of the top of the hill. Mm-hmm. And they climb the hill, they go all the way to the top. And even to get to the temple, there are 18 major steps to climb up. And they have, you know, hymns that they sing, and they climb up all the way to that place. And then I think they burst the coconuts open somewhere. I think that's the tradition. Correct me if I'm wrong. But when this happened, this was an 800-year-long tradition of not letting women in. So this morning, when I was so excited, I even woke up Shane and I told him that women can now enter Sabarimala. I called my mum in the morning and I told her, isn't that great? Isn't that great news for women? Yeah. And she said, oh, is it? Because my mother is someone who's always willing to learn from my views and ideologies, and she doesn't really contest me as much. But so if I come with a new opinion, she's always happy to listen. So she was like, is it? And I said, why is it not great news? And she said, because we all grew up hearing that women should not go into Sabarimala, and now they've suddenly changed it. Isn't that weird? So, you know, I used an analogy to explain something to her. There's another temple in Kerala called Guruvayur, which is one of the most famous temples, again, in Kerala. And once upon a time, during the British rule, Guruvayur was a temple that the lower caste people could not enter. And I belong to the lower caste. I belong to the, not the untouchable caste, but like one of the Shudra communities in
well,
India.
We can't be friends, Ankita.
We can't be friends. we wouldn't talk in another time.
We've got to change the contract.
Yeah. So I belong to that. My parents belong to that community. Mm-hmm. So my parents feel very strongly about the oppression that the lower caste people within our community used to face. So once upon a time, when the lower caste people were not allowed to enter the temple, the four roads surrounding the temple, they would let animals like cows and bulls and dogs enter, but not the lower caste people. And it was only much later that with a lot of resistance from our ancestors, from the lower caste communities, that now everyone can enter the Guruvayur temple. Everyone, that is, except for Christians and Muslims. They're strictly against that. Anyway, yeah, that is one of the stories that prevails, that now lower caste people can enter the temple. And I said, right, I told my mother, it's exactly the same, isn't it? I made that comparison, and suddenly it made sense to her that, sure, yeah, equality is all about everyone being able to enter a temple, a place of worship.
Yeah.
So there you go.
The issue I personally have with this, and Ankita, I really don't have any problems with people being religious, following the Gita. No disrespect at all. In fact, like, I think it's a really beautiful thing, following religion, going to the mandir. I really enjoy it myself. I'm not the most religious person, but I really think it's a beautiful part of our culture. Mm-hmm. But I think that it becomes a problem when it starts to affect you. When I was in India 3-4 years ago, not even 3-4, wow, I'm so distorted with time. Like, this was before Prague, so like 6 years ago. I went to Amritsar, and I went with my mama, so my uncle and my brother. It was just three of us. So I was with two grown men, and just me. Now, we did a trip. We did Friday, we went to Jammu Kashmir. So we did Vaishno Devi, which is the pilgrimage for Mataji. Saturday, we did Amritsar, which is a golden temple. And then Sunday, we just spent the whole day just going around mandirs. Then we flew back to Delhi on Monday. Now, obviously, my luck, I got my period on the Friday.
Okay.
Now, what am I supposed to do?
Stay in the hotel room.
Well, but do I tell them? Am I allowed to say that I have my period in front of two men?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I hadn't thought of
that. I was with that. Because as a young girl, I wasn't even allowed to show my pads in front of my dad. I wasn't allowed to even mention any female body part, nothing. You know, we were very, very conservative in that way. Now, I'm in Jammu and Kashmir. I have like a really bad stomach bug. I got my period. I'm in a lot of pain, really super uncomfortable. And my mamaji is saying, Meenal, why aren't you climbing? Why aren't you going? What's wrong? Why are you so bummed out? And in my head, I'm like, well, mate, I'm on my bloody period. Bloody period, literally. But I can't do anything. And I was stuck. Now, we went to Jammu Kashmir. And when you get to the top of the hill, that's where they say Mataji descended, right? And that's where, like, that's a holy, holy place. And I was too afraid to enter. Because obviously I've climbed for like 2 hours. I'm not clean. I'm sweaty. I'm on my period. Technically, I'm not allowed in the mandir. But I went inside. Because I didn't know what to do. Because I can't tell them.
People are going to burn effigies of you. Because
probably.
Yeah.
Oh my God. They're going to have like print photos of me and like burn it. Especially this lady in Kerala who seems to be really against it. But then the next day I went to Amritsar and the same thing. But I didn't know what to do. And I'm sure a lot of girls are in the same position when they have their periods. And not just the fact about going to the mandir, you're in pain. You have a problem. You can't express it to someone. You can't find help. And I think that's the worst thing, because it's kind of like putting you in a handicap. Like, you're kind of like disabled for those 7 days or forever how long, because you're restricted in so many ways.
Well, yeah. And it's so interesting that there's a Brahmin family that lives close to my parents' house. And I was just speaking to the lady there, and she has two really young children and, you know, a husband. And apparently, in her Brahmin community, when you're on your period, you don't even enter the kitchen because you're too impure to touch the food that people in the house are eating. And I'm like, I'm ready to bet my shirt that your husband does not cook. Because it's a really, yeah, it's a kind of traditional home. It's a very, very traditional home. So who feeds the kids? If the woman of the house cannot enter the kitchen, who is feeding the family? I don't know. I didn't ask her that question because I was like, oh, okay, that's probably like a can of worms or something.
Yeah. But you know, Ankita, just going back to the point about saying that women are impure, we have to give birth and God made us this way. I'm just like Googling a few things, and I've seen that some Hindu priest has written that, you know, women's involvement in worship during the menstrual cycle is implied in a lot of places in the Gita, and it has a script in Sanskrit. My Sanskrit isn't great, so I'm not going to read it. But there is like, you know, you have here from in the Purana, in the Vedas, and it's right here in front of me. So there is text written that women are impure, but the interesting thing that it says is that so any body fluids that's exiting our body, whether it's sputum, whether it's urine, anything is considered impure. And it's written in the Gita that men are considered, so women are only considered impure during the period, okay? Around that, when they're not in the period, they're pure.
Okay.
But men, on the other hand, are considered perpetually unclean, and they need to bathe every day to perform the prayers.
Nobody ever talks about that.
So men are so exactly. So this is really interesting. So I'm going to read it out. I'm going to read it out really clearly so everybody can listen. It says, men are considered perpetually unclean. Women, on the other hand, are considered perpetually pure, except during the days of their period.
Wow, nobody ever talks about that. Thank you for reading that out.
Do we tell men to take a shower before going to the mandir? No.
I don't. Yeah, I guess not.
But that's what they're supposed to do.
I think in some communities they do say that you can't enter the mandir without showering. But
well, I mean, generally before you go to the mandir, you would just like, it's basic, like general.
Yeah, before getting up, waking up,
common
in the morning,
sense,
getting out of the house to go to work, people shower.
Right? Yeah, and yeah. So, but I mean, when I go to the mandir, for example, when we have aarti in the mandir in Gibraltar, 7 o'clock, people finish work at 6 or 6:30. They come straight from their work. No one tells them to have a shower.
Yeah, well.
But women have to take a shower, whether sometimes even if they're not on their period, we have to dress up and doll up because we're going to the mandir, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this is really interesting because I worked with ISKCON. This is the Hare Krishna Hare Rama Society, right? Okay. And it's very westernized. It's called International Society of Krishna Consciousness.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen this in Edinburgh, people chanting down the streets of Edinburgh.
Yeah, I've seen people in orange clothes on New Year's Eve handing out Indian sweets.
Yeah, so that's the ISKCON. These are ISKCON people, right? And I worked with them for a couple of months when I was doing my volunteering work in my gap year.
Okay.
And I just had a thought in my head that because a lot of westernized people are coming into this society, how do they feel? Because obviously their thinking is a bit more modernized, right? I mean, if you go to India right now and you tell a 12-year-old girl in the street, oh, by the way, did you know that you can't go into the mandir when you have your period? They'll be like, yeah, of course I knew that.
Yeah.
But if you tell a white woman, a westernized woman, who's entered our society, who's entered the Krishna society, and you tell her, well, you can't come in because you're in your period, she's going to have some questions too, right?
Yeah.
So I'm on an ISKCON forum right now.
Yeah.
And so the founder of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, so he's the guy who founded this, and he went into the Western world and spread the word of Krishna. He's written, according to Smrta Vidhi, which is, I assume, is some part of the Vedas, a woman in a period cannot touch the deity. However, according to Goswami Vidhi, I assume another Veda author, says, in quotes, she can, but better she doesn't.
Oh, okay.
So it's not entirely prohibited.
Is that a grammatical thing? Can you? Of course.
Well, it says, I'm going to say it again. It says she can, but better she doesn't.
Okay, yeah.
Oh. So obviously it's possible, you're allowed, but it's better you don't. And so women, so imagine like these women, and according to Krishna consciousness, these people, when they come into the society, you know, they chant, they do the japa every morning, and you know, I've seen it happen in front of my, like, spend 2 hours just meditating. It's incredible to watch. But women on the periods, in some places and in some texts, say that they're not even allowed to touch the mala, the beads of chanting. So some people have you know, like I've only been raised in the way, Ankita, that I'm not allowed to enter the mandir. I was told
as a girl, menstruating girl, that I'm not allowed to touch the tulsi plant. I'm not allowed
to
go.
Do you remember Aditi Gupta from Menstrupedia? She wasn't allowed to enter the kitchen.
Oh yeah, right. The kitchen thing again.
So
yeah.
So it depends on, and I, again, all our listeners out there, please tell us what you went through, because as I said, I want to learn more, and I'm sure so does Ankita. So it'd be really interesting to see where the prohibitions have been in the household.
And just to put a bow on everything, I was speaking to one of my colleagues the other day who was raised a devout Catholic. And I think until her early 20s, she would go to the church. She was very involved with the youth groups and community and everything. Like, she was a churchgoer and extremely, extremely religious. And then now she is no longer a religious Catholic anymore, but she was telling me how all of the things that you read about in self-help books, like meditation, mindfulness, putting positive thoughts out into the universe, and, you know, basic just mindfulness-related things, she has forgotten how to do that in her present-day life when she no longer goes to church. But she still feels and truly believes that when she was a churchgoer, she used to actually spend time doing all of the things that today's big books, like self-help books, are advising people mm-hmm. to do in order to lead a happier life. It's just that there are many other parts of her religion that she doesn't agree with, the whole concept of sin and whatnot. But there are so many other good things that come with religion. There are so many beautiful things that come with religion yep. that make people, the whole community feeling, where people come together and they're there for each other, and they're taught yep. that they need to stand up for each other. It's just beautiful, the kind of cohesiveness that religion can bring into society. But at the same time, when people just mm-hmm. go overboard and ban women and other minorities from doing certain things and just segregate yeah. people, that's when it starts yeah. getting a little, you know.
But you spoke, Ankita, just to add to what you just said, because you spoke about your friend, she was Christian, you said?
No, she's a Catholic, yeah.
Catholic, yeah. So there's a BBC presenter, his name is Nihal, and he has a show on BBC, mm-hmm. and he holds like really interesting debates. I think it was just today. He tweeted out saying that a devout Christian has called into my BBC Asia Network show to say that women who are menstruating should not be allowed into a church. So it's not only in a mandir, it's also in a church. And then someone tweeted, it's quite funny. He says, mm-hmm. Someone replied saying, who do we suggest should check whether women are menstruating or not? Should we have period bounces? But it's true though. Who knows? Who knows if you got your period?
Like, when you went into a temple when you were on your period. And like the temple that I told you about, Gurvayur, that doesn't want Muslims and Christians entering. Who is to know what kind of physical signs are we carrying around saying that I am a Christian and I'm a Muslim?
Yeah.
Except for people who do like actively choose to dress in a particular kind of way. How do you know when you look at someone?
But there's some positive responses in some mandirs, Ankita. There's one Gurdwara in Shepherd's Bush here in London, and they've installed sanitary towels like in the toilets to help any ladies if they need it. So, you know, some Gurdwaras, mandirs, and I'm sure, again, there are many more in India, and if there are, please let us know. I'm sure there are more places which are trying to encourage trying to discourage discrimination. So I think that one thing that confuses me as well sometimes is that Sabarimala temple is a religious thing, right? Yeah. Now, why does the state have a say in this? Because I'm thinking, right, if you have in the Bible, and I'm sure in the Gita somewhere it says, no sex before marriage, right? Mm-hmm. If you have sex before marriage, do you go to jail? Because that's, you have to divide church and state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or religion and state in this case, because we're not church and mandir. But so why did the state get involved? Why did it have to go into lawyers' hands? Was it because a lot of people were protesting, or?
I'm not entirely sure. I feel like I know the reason why state gets involved in religious matters is, you know, from the beginning, think of sati and other horrendous things that used to happen that was religiously mm-hmm. approved or community-wise approved. We want to avoid horrible things from happening, like mercy killing or whatever, because, you know, someone can just stand on a podium and say, according to our religion, it's okay to kill someone who had sex before marriage. And we want to to try to have some sort of legal enforcement to prevent that from happening and from protecting citizens. Mm-hmm. In this case, our Supreme Court has been having a lot of wins lately. I'm very proud of the Indian Supreme Court right now with the legalization of gay marriage, with adultery being legalized, wherein women are allowed to have relations outside of their marriage and it's not just men who go around having sex everywhere. Mm-hmm. And also, finally, they've come out and they've said that it's okay for women to enter. I think it's just change happening in this world. But yeah, the question about why they're allowed to do that, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm just very glad that they do.
No, absolutely. No, because I think sometimes law has to come in, right? Yeah. And say, okay, this is wrong. We can't have this happening in our country.
Because we have a few lawyers listening to our episode. So I would really appreciate it if our lawyer listeners. Priyanka. Priyanka. And also, I think I remember her name. Anne-Mary, was it? Who had responded to one of our previous episodes. She was a lawyer as well.
Great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our lawyer listeners and our loyal listeners to
see episode. What you did there. Good one. So I think I'd love, as I said, we've mentioned in this podcast, please let us know your thoughts. Please let us know what you've been through at home. Mm-hmm. We've heard a few things especially from our guests who we've had in the previous seasons. We've had our own conversations with our friends and family, but you know, this is the whole idea behind this is we are a community of people. We're here to help each other. So let us know what you've been through and if it's still happening. That would be really interesting. And again, as Ankit said, any lawyers, please educate us. That would be really great.
Yep. And to do this, you can send us a mail to mail@desioutsiders.com. You can also send us personal messages and direct messages on social media, where you'll find us @DesiOutsiders. And we are quick to respond to your DMs especially. And we're getting on top of responding to your emails as well. We're getting pretty good at it. So yes, do get in touch with us and we will be back in touch with you. And we will also share your insights on a future episode.
So until next week, I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And we are the Desi Outsiders. Ankita, how do you pronounce it?
Shabarimala
temple. Yeah, so please cut that out, Shane. Don't want to look like an idiot. Thank you very much.